that, look, your people was the cause of our downfall. I heard some comments today. When I heard those comments, I was struck. And I told that person, listen, it might not be a question now, president, that's not a descendant, of anybody that landed in Kansas, the Spanish people. All the English people that landed in Jamestown. I want to spell it something to you. How many Indian people do you see in the General Assembly of the Union? How many Indian people do you see that passed the ball? How many Indian people do you see in the Congress of the United States? Only one person has reached their part of the entire country, and that's Church, Charles Church. He was a calling, he was the Vice President of the United States. And now I say, why cut off the hand that helped you most? Listen, my friend, that's what we are confronted with today. If we can't wait to come in with our friends, sometimes we do not know where our friend is. As I was riding from Denver, Colorado, there was a person on that train from Cambodia. And I was going to ask him what that horrible war in Vietnam. A boy from Cambodia asked his commander, where is he in? And his commander told him, he might be in the next one. And I'm telling you, true friends describe him. And I can't point my finger at a person here or there, but I want them to be trusted. That's what I want to do. The only way, whether it be a community, whether it be a state, whether it be a nation, or a nation around the world, if we want friendship, we've got to work together. You and you. And I heard God say, and by mankind, that if this world is the ultimate peace, if we are to help her, Indian people, we've got to work together. That's my advice now. We've been cooperative. Use the discretion. Use diplomacy. Last but not least, thank you.
you'll bring us some slides depicting various archaeological work and activities, some of which, all of which I presume involve something.
Kirby, you want the lights out?
Do you want a larger screen?
I'll give you. They said we didn't have another screen.
Oh,
Okay, let's turn the light then. Everybody can see that. Everybody can see that. All right. That's all. Okay. Taking up these food points for years and years and years. I said, God, can I know someplace on the farm there's some undisturbed soil that we go in there and put a test and find it? So we did. Dr. McGarry and Bill Benzall and myself and a couple of young folks at Texas went in and started the test. This is down just above King Creek on the Dinwiddie, on the Williamson site. Down to this pile of lime, the soil would be washed down the slope from the farm area. There's not much of this. This little band right here is the topsoil, an old topsoil which existed long before the farm began to be planted. There's nothing in it in that topsoil. Here is another 8 inches subsoil which existed on this site at Lord. Everything dropped out years ago. Granted, it was building up from topsoil formation. Down here, about 18 inches below the ground level today, we actually found an original surface with boot points, hard, chickish, and maybe point. Down here, the level of about 12,000 BC, Indians were living there in Dinwiddie County. Up in Morgan, Virginia, the Kansas University group and the Thunderbird group were excavating number of sites along the Shenandoah River. Again, this circle zone is different in place. The debris is from a late Paleolithic site, about 90,000 years ago. Now, those people were probably nomad hunters. Bridges existed on meat. And of course, as you well know, modern day so-called hunting peoples who principally subsist on meat actually get about 60% of their calories from the vegetable foods and small game that the women collect while the men plan to go hunting big game. If you find archaeological findings like contained beautifully prepared hunting implements, did you know that they did an awful lot of talking about hunting? But you can be sure that the women were still bringing in at least half of the diet. This is the cave over in southwest of Virginia on the Cedar Creek. This is called Darius Cave because that's the name of the family that originally owned this property. It now belongs to a family called Breeden. And Colonel McCord being sometimes somewhat loose stocky that, oh no, let's call it Darius Cave. We can't call it the breeding site. I don't know why. We went down to 11 feet to the floor of this cave. There's 3 10-foot squares. There's still a lot of caves available for excavation. Now this is a beautiful site because people live there and drop their broken tools and pots, etc., on the floor. They move away, the wind would blow sand and silt in and seal that floor level. Another tribe or a group of family would move in, live there for a few years, move out, again the rain and the wind would seal it with fresh soil. So we had 9 distinct cultural levels from that site, each one of them clearly marked in technical. I went up there to spend the week working on the site, and we kept this one wall covered with this tarpaulin. If you expose it for very long, fungus would begin to grow on the next surface, and you couldn't see it. side limestone, which occurred out on the hillside, and the other level is chosen a pale quartz limestone, which occurred out here on the hillside. Two different groups of people made the same tool at different times, but their preference for the tool material. Now, this cave bottoms out at the very beginning of what we call the Archaic period, the Paleo period. American Indians were principally hunters. In the Archaic period, they were beginning to experiment with their environment, to explore its possibilities. By the time the Europeans came over here, the American Indians were using as food or as medicine or as forage or textile material over 250 different plants. Most of these plants were used as food material. Starting back here about 9,000 years ago, I think the Indians spent an awful long time being a little bit sick at the stomach all the time because they were experimenting to find out what was good to eat and what wasn't. This occurred to me one day that I was standing on the top of the ground of the museum in Cleveland, Ohio. There was a shrub with berries on it, and I didn't know what they were, and Colonel Floyd didn't know what they were, and we looked at them, and they didn't look bad, and both they burnt our taste. That's when we realized that we were doing just what the Indians do. We didn't eat the berries. We said we would choose not to eat the berries. Now, here's that figure we are talking about. Later after later, sampling is being taken. All the way down to a level, flood deposit level, containing just 31 feet. That's what, this is the sort of thing, you know, heavy students in archaeology, it's supposed to be this way. The Indian says it never is. But here it was. Doesn't it look beautiful? And some of these surfaces you can see where they hit dug from one level into another by the Indians, food storage pit, cooking pit, fireplace, and this sort of thing. All the way to the rift waters. That site is well worth further study by somebody with money enough to put in a real full-scale research operation. Archaic Indians, as I say, were feeling out their environment. This is an archaic site down here in the Kaiser. Oyster shells. Acres of oyster shells, many feet deep. Well, they discovered once they tried an oyster, they were smart enough to throw the guy on the different thing. So they ate lots of oysters. And contained around this area where they were shucking oysters, eating oysters. Now, the general interpretation is that they were living here on top of these raw oyster shells. Now, that's ridiculous. This is a mistake an awful lot of people make when they start dealing with archaeology. They start dealing with artifacts, not with people. And, you know, I've got a friend up in New York who draws up family trees of projectile points. And I asked him one day, I said, Lou, how many points did you put in the box in order to get the breed started? People dump these oyster shells here. You ever walk around barefooted on fresh raw oyster shells? Why, you'd go broke by any man then. No, they came in someplace else. And people would come to camp on a surface that was brassed over here. Old oyster shells, they came from, not the fresh new shells. The artifacts that were dropped here were dropped by Indians that ate oysters and something more different. Over in Tennessee, Old Major Webb actually made a number of tremendous shell mills. This is the campfire site. The Archaic campfire site. Now this site is one of the towers that this is really long. The American Bank site. We dug it several years ago from the American Bank project. Right on the banks of James River. It sits right up on bluff, the bank of creek. The creek feeds into what's called Governor Dale's Fish Pond. Well, this is a little shallow, single occupation, never plowed, except off this really small, 2 inches of deep forest soil. We're all living for. This is Christ, the first true Father, is early Sunday. And I think about 1500 BC would be a good date for this side. The girl of the Lord said in the little village, which was a village, all king. And he would have gone all the way up the creek. Because every spring the heron would come up that creek and were massive. And our quarters, the underwater quarters, going down there every spring with buckets and burlap bags and leaf grapes and just scooping these herring out of the creek to come along. And this is another thing of all the spray down the herring. And this is the very, very beginning of what we call the woodland period. Now, the nomenclature on the cultural period of the American Indian. It is another one of those camels that the horse is symbolized to me. We started off Dr. Jimmy Griffin up at Michigan to analyze material, artifacts, from sites through the northeastern United States, which is geographically a woodland area. And you can go out here and hold over the field and do nothing to it in 5 years and throw it up in trees, not grass or leaves, but trees. It'll go up in the woods. So he called it Northeastern Woodland Culture, simply referring to the geographical area that came from. So when we speak of the woodland area, we're talking about the Indian culture, the eastern United States, from about 1000 BC on up to colonial times. These people were agriculturalists, settled villages, working toward larger scale social, political organizations, the Powhatan Confederation, the Five Nations, the Iroquois, this sort of thing. The earlier period preceding woodland called the Archaic. Bill Rich in New York defined the Archaic in a series of sites he does up there in the remote lake area. He recognized them as being older than the woodland period, so he called it Archaic, which simply meant old. And then when they discovered the great Pleistocene animal hunting people of the West from late glacial times, that was old too. Well, we'd already used one word for old, so we just used another word for old, paleo. That means old also. It doesn't mean older, it just means old. So we get rid of the paleo is older than archaic, which is old. And both of them are older than woodland, which is agriculture. The pottery, the corn, the squash, and that sort of thing. The interesting thing about the Indian agriculture series of stones in the scattered park. And this is the site we dug over here on the Appomattox, right down at the edge of Colonial Pines. All of these were dug by various chapters of the society, or in some cases by cookings, never been by the society. Agricultural triad of the American Indian, now we're coming on up later in time. This is a woodland site that we excavated over in Richmond, right below the fairgrounds. Now, this site has been robbed by relic collectors over the years, so the field was left a mass of chuck holes all over the place. And we went in and laid out squares here and there where we could. And we began excavating pits. Most of these pits were probably dug initially for food storage. Then the probably spring, what food residue was left there with the pit was spoiled, there was just no trash in the pit. And that was just fine with us. And we got into this one, and we found an old woman. Folded up and buried in this pit. And when we dressed up around it, we found these small post molds and put sticks in them and circumcised fence as we dress all around this pit, it's down the post hole, so we knew we had another burial also. And we don't know what in the world the pit was for, unless the reference based on evidence would think this area was very, very shallow, probably even very hurried. And maybe put in for the dogs out. Don't know. But all the evidence we have from the area immediately around the restaurant is that very, very little care was given to the dead. And from the Spanish tip, you go back up a little farther west of the state and you find elaborately prepared burials. You go down southeast of the state, you find elaborately prepared burials. But right around Richmond in the area of James River, and this sort of thing. No grave goods. I'm sure that the people carried with whatever clothing they wore at the time, but nothing like the sort of ceremony we find down in this area and gone down to the coast, skip north and go to Britain, to go back to the west. It makes me sort of bad. I live west of Richmond. And here they're very thin up here. Now, these are not either models that somebody else is speaking of locally or just off the working in this house. Ben traced out the various pits that show up. And you see, as we remove the soil, slowly and carefully, we not only watch here this horizontal pattern for changes, but you look at the surface of the work and the color changes. Those things will show us where we're about to find something different. Now, these two areas mark off fire places. The soil is weighted. The clay material in this silt has been heated up and will turn to red oxidation. This black area here is going to be something else. Now, this site is about that just outside of Ranford. The country's club sits right on it now. We're going to build an off course of country club, and we've got a year's lead time to go in the next year. I'm making a couple of slides. There's a palisade that encircles this village. All the way around, several acres, enclosed in this wall. Now, this burial is right here to the pit. Touches or goes into the palisade line. Later, we found houses the palisade line went through. The village was there, then later, after the village was in the building, they built the palisade. This is late 1500s now, and I have my own suspicions as to why they needed the palisade. There weren't any Europeans down here earlier. Another thing we found that we can do in archaeology, as we test the site and find that it's just a single component, no depth to it, nothing to worry about. We can get earth moving equipment and just give the stuff the pile of stone soil right off of it, then go in and map and measure and mark the FPS for the complete plan to this. This is an aerial photograph made by the Boeing airplane by an amateur. Obviously, it doesn't show very much. They called them that site in the bulletin board, and they took the aerial photograph and I doctored it a little bit before we printed it, so the palisade shows up and all that. Now, Lord was asking on. There is a room here, the plateau of the two. The American Indian developed a food base that is the best of any in the world. Did you know that 50% of the vegetable foods that are eaten in the world were not even known in the old world until we came over here and found it? You name something you love to eat in your garden, and the chances are better than even that it's an American New World crop which was discovered and cultivated by an American Indian. sincere things say. Beans, the broad beans, string beans, main beans, white beans, butter beans, all of those are American Indians. They were all called the Navy beans, the great northern Navy beans, the bean that our Navy operates on. It has not been changed. The Indians of the Great Lakes had cultivated, developed a strain of beans that were produced in a short, cool growing season, right? Yeah. Do they imperfect? It? Nothing to do with it. We still grow it. Keep tons of it. I prefer the red kidney beans myself. It's snap beans, butter beans, and in whole Asiolus family, they're developed. Central and South America and eventually North America and America to grow. All three principal varieties of corn. Your meal corn, your sweet corn, your refined root corn. They had them all. They had them all. Now this is, when I first came into Virginia, people would start telling me about, oh, I know where there's an ancient burial mound, you know. I'm where? Oh, down the river a ways. Well, I didn't know. I just come here. I didn't know anything about Virginia. And where I come from, there are burial mounds all over the place. I knew that Thomas Jefferson did the first real archaeology on a Virginia burial mound. Well, there aren't burial mounds in Virginia east of the river down the river. And there are burial mounds west. Different culture, different ceremonies. But this is all led to a burial mound. Now believe me, I wouldn't laugh at you, but it would arrive. It's been plowed down. The column is still 1,250 feet high, or it was. And over hundreds of years of plowing, it's been eroding away. So we figured, all right, it's gone, but it seems that there isn't any left to it. We've told the crew, now this is just about the way we do it. Look at this thing. Relic collectors have been into it. I would have got some scratch yourself. Get that out of the way. Here's a pretty food. So we dug it, and we did find down here in this bottom level some original burials that had not been disturbed. And those were taken out. All of our burials, we take them up to the Smithsonian. And they are skinned and sold for analysis and study. We want to know such things as, now, a thing like this, and I tell you, two or three dead Indians, and you can know their ability to tear a hose. But when you take the cemetery, one of the cemeteries, Shannon site, was there inside the house, outside the house, out the street, wherever. But the general makeup of the population, the demographic portrait of the tribe, you know, how many old people, how many young people, how many men, how many women, how many children, what ages did the children die at? What was the oldest person you found in the data? What was the average age of the people you found dead? What did they die of? Did you find evidence of malnutrition? Did you find evidence of a number of diseases that leave their marks on their bones? As a matter of fact, we had skeletons at the Shannon site, and everybody was in. Now look, this is very exciting. We've got evidence of bone syphilis here. And I said, horse radish. There wasn't any syphilis in the New World. Oh, but that's where it came from. I said, certainly it came from here. But that's not bone syphilis. What is it? It's cancer disease. It's cancer. I've got a theory about that syphilis. You know, the American Indian also is supposed to have given that to the Europeans. Well, they discerned it. We don't find any evidence of American Indians until actually Europeans in here. So fortunately, I'm not exactly a chemist, but they say that's just the way I make my living. I'm a biologist, I'm a trainer. You can take a disease germ and play it out on the culture and carry it for generations. Generation after generation take it off that culture and begin to start putting it through generation after generation in the town, get it big hands or something like that. The next several generations, you take the samples and say, guinea pig, you give it to somebody, bingo, you've got the disease again. We've got a disease in the New World, South America, in the continent part, where the Europeans went first, you know, it's called yaws. And you can take the disparity of yaws and subject it to every test known to medical science, and you can't tell if it's subjects. It looks like it, acts like it, grows in the same place. But as yaws, it only causes a skin disease. I think when the Europeans came over, they did not have the same thousands of years of exposure to yaws, and they contracted it into being syphilis. And then it was more thorough, it was brought back to the North American Indians, and put it all through it. But we didn't give syphilis to the Europeans, we brought it back to us. Now this is the truth. This is what most people think about in terms of archaeology. Pretty rocks. That is pretty rock. It's pretty rock because somebody had a point in the knowledge of the time to dress this thing down and make this blade. It's a little better than all the communities. In there with it was the shadow of a short, stout shaft of a knurled handle. It was just that long enough to be an ox goad or a wife encourager or something like that. Thank you.